All right, we are in Joshua chapter 11. We're doing Joshua and Judges here for Sunday school, but Joshua chapter 11 is where we finished up last time. This says I'm connected. Is that the case? There we go. Okay. Sometimes my setting that says you're connected is not always truthful. It doesn't line up with theirs, so I want to make sure. So, Joshua 11, verse 18 is where we're going to pick up the story today. This is where we left off a couple of weeks ago. Of course, last week we had a different schedule with homecoming. But Joshua 11, verse 18, Joshua made war a long time with all those kings. There was not a city that made peace with the children of Israel, save the Hivites, the inhabitants of Gibeon. All other they took in battle. For it was of the Lord to harden their hearts, that they should come against Israel in battle, that he might destroy them utterly, and they might have no favor, that he might destroy them as the Lord had commanded Moses. So you see here in verses 18, 19, and 20, a summary of a lot of time. A lot of the conservative commentators would say this whole scenario that's described in Joshua 11, reviewed in chapter 12, is upwards of 5 years. That's kind of summarized here. But I want you to notice something here in verse number 20. It was of the Lord to harden their hearts that they should come against Israel in battle. There'll be a lot of messages on TV today and probably replayed during the week and different places across our country basically saying it's not God's will for you to have difficulty. It's God's will for you to have peace and prosperity and ease and wealth and all of that. Is that always the case? I mean, does this sound like they had messed up and they were being judged? Or does this sound like this was God's will that they had battles to fight? I mean, they were exactly in the will of God, doing what they were supposed to do in the place where they were supposed to be, and God said, this is the way I want it. I want you to have battles to fight. Now, the counterpoint to that wasn't all the time. There was a period of time that they had that, and then there was a period of time where they had the land to inherit, and they had a time of peace and a time to enjoy the blessings of God and so forth. I just think it's important. There's that constant stream out there. If you look for, I don't want all of the political ads and political news and who got shot, stabbed, robbed, whatever, so I don't want to watch that kind of news. Maybe I can find something religious. Even in that circle, there's things that need to be filtered and things that need to be compared against the Word of God. But here, it was of the Lord to harden their hearts that they should come against Israel in battle. It was God's will that they have battles. It was God's plan to use Israel as the means to destroy them. Could God have sent fire from heaven, hailstones, earthquakes, plague, whatever? Yes, God chose to let Israel go and fight them one group at the time, one city at the time. And there are times when we wish God would do it differently in our lives, right? I wish God would just push a button and fix everything. And sometimes God does just move miraculously like that, and we don't discount it. But many times God's plan is that we participate. We do the role that He has laid out for us, and He intervenes and does what we cannot do as we obey and do what He's told us to do. But then look with me in verse number 21. At that time came Joshua and cut off the Anakims from the mountains, from Hebron, Debir, Anab, and all the mountains of Judah, and from all the mountains of Israel. Joshua destroyed them utterly with their cities. Do you remember where we first heard that name? Anakims. If the IMS, here's you a free Hebrew lesson, okay? The IMS on the end of that word is a plural ending in Hebrew, okay? So the name is Anak. And if I'm going to Englishize it, it would be the Anax, if I just put an S on the end of that. Doesn't work very well. Okay, that's why they made it Anakims, okay? But it's who are the Anakims? Numbers chapter 13 is where we're really first introduced to Anak. Numbers chapter 13 is where the spies have been sent in the first time by Moses. 12 spies, they were gone 40 days. And when they come back, they said this, we came into the land whither thou sentest, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. Moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. Anak was a well-known, probably feared, what we might say legendary today, giant. He was the father of giants. Okay? And so in Numbers 13, one of the big things that they listed as reasons they were scared to go into the promised land was the Anakims, that is, the sons of the giants, the enemy that was too big and so forth. So when God said, all right, fine, you don't believe me, you're going to wander in the wilderness 40 years, your children are going to go in, and they're going to defeat them. Guess what we see here in Joshua? We see the exact fulfillment of that statement by God. It was, in fact, their children and grandchildren who went in. And in the course of what has been described here of Joshua's conquest and the different groups that came against Israel and fought against Israel, it is specifically mentioned that Joshua cut off the Anakims. Why? Because that was part of the promise God had made. God had promised them, I will take care of all of your enemies. There will not any man be able to stand before you. Sometimes that's easier to see than others, isn't it? You know, okay, I have an unexpected bill for $20. Maybe it's easier to see how the Lord will provide for that than if I had an unexpected bill for $1,000, right? Sometimes it's easier to see, in certain situations, I could see how this could happen. In other situations, it's like, well, that's impossible. Well, that's us looking at it from a human lens instead of saying God can intervene with divine power and divine resources. But here, the Anakims, I think, are specifically mentioned because of their own testimony. That was a major component in their fear and reluctance and refusal to trust the promises of God back in the book of Numbers. After they had wandered 40 years in the wilderness, or probably 39 years. It was that 40th year, that last year before they actually went into the promised land. You remember God had them fight a couple of battles while Moses was still alive. And, you know, there were a couple of kings that were defeated as part of that. Well, that's listed in Deuteronomy chapter 1 and 2. But particularly in Deuteronomy chapter 2, as Moses is kind of reviewing what happened, we get down to verse number 9 of Deuteronomy chapter 2. The Lord said unto me, distress not the Moabites, neither contend with them in battle. For I will not give thee of their land for a possession, because I've given Ar unto the children of Lot for a possession. The Emims dwelt there in times past, a great people and many and tall as the... Are you looking at it? What does that say? As the Anakims. So, the children of Lot, the Ammonites had giants. They just called it a different name. Verse 11 says, which were also accounted giants as the Anakims, but the Moabites called them Emims. So they had a different name for them, but it was the same problem. Same giants, same difficulties, same obstacles to overcome. But the children of Lot, the Moabites, had giants. Interesting. The name Emims comes from the Hebrew word that means terrors. These are the terrors. These are the terrible ones. You know, that's kind of what they called them. They pretty much called them a problem. If you look in verse number 12 of Deuteronomy chapter 2, the Horims also dwelt in Seir before time, but the children of Esau succeeded them when they had destroyed them from before them and dwelt in their stead as Israel did in the land of his possession, which the Lord gave unto them. So the Horims were what, you know, Esau's descendants called them. If we drop down in Deuteronomy chapter 2 to verse number 19, when thou comest nigh over against the children of Ammon, distress them not. So Moab and Ammon, that's the two illegitimate sons of Lot. That's the descendants of Lot. We talked about the Moabites before. Deuteronomy 2, verse 19, he said, don't mess with the children of Ammon, for I will not give thee of the land of the children of Ammon any possession, because I've given it to the children of Lot for a possession. That also was accounted a land of giants. Giants dwelt therein in old time. The Ammonites called them Zamzamims, a people many and great and tall as the, here we have it again, Anakims. So what you have here in Deuteronomy chapter 2 is Moses is reviewing and saying, look, your cousins, the descendants of Lot, they fought the giants. And your cousins from through a different connection, the descendants of Esau, they fought giants. And then if we drop over into Deuteronomy chapter 3, then we turn and went up the way to Bashan, and Og, king of Bashan, came out against us, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei. And the Lord said unto me, fear him not, I will deliver him and his people. If you drop down to, let me see here, verse 11 of that same chapter, Deuteronomy 3, verse 11, only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the remnant of the giants. Behold, his bedstead was a bedstead of iron. Is it not in Rabbath of the children of Ammon? 9 cubits was the length thereof. You doing the math in your head? 14 and a half feet, if we use, 18 inches as a cubit. Okay, yeah, I'd say that qualifies as a giant, wouldn't you? Yeah. Talk about king-size bed? Okay, anyway. But the point is that God had helped the descendants of Esau. God had helped the descendants of Lot through the Moabites and Ammonites. God could help the children of Israel, and he would. Israel simply refused to act in faith and let God handle that problem. And as a result, many of them lost the opportunity to enter the promised land. They were told, you're going to wander in the wilderness till you die, and your children and grandchildren are going to go in and possess the land. But, back in Joshua chapter 11, when it says, at that time came Joshua and cut off the Anakims from the mountains, that's not, a hollow statement. It's not filler. I mean, that really is tying things together with what God had promised them, and it was a previous failure that this time, with the help of God, was overcome. Thank the Lord. Okay? So, we looked at the map a little bit last time, and I put a different map here that I think I can zoom in a little bit more, but as we look at the end of chapter 11, I want to try to look at some of this. He cut off, verse 21, he cut off the Anakims from Hebron, Debir, Anab, and all the mountains of Judah. Okay, where is that section? Now, this is more of the zoomed out view. You probably can't read it unless you have exceptional eyesight. But in the upper left, there's a color code. Each one of those colors represents the land allotted to one of the 12 tribes. But if I zoom it in far enough, you might be able to read that. You can no longer see the land area. Okay, that's the unfortunate side effect there. But the pink down here at the bottom, that large area in pink or pinkish purple, I really do not wish to debate color shades, but that area there with green in the middle of it, hopefully we can agree on that one, all right? That is the area that was allocated to Judah. Okay, so when it says here that they cut off the Anakims from Hebron and the mountains of Judah, see if I can zoom in any more. Not really. Right here in the middle, if you can see my red pointer circle there, I'm circling Hebron. It is just directly south of Jerusalem. Okay, but that area there, Hebron, and I have a tighter shot of this. See if I can zoom in any more than that. That's probably about as far as I'm going to be able to go. But Hebron and the mountains of Judah, what is that? It's that pinkish purplish area there. So basically the southern part, there was not just one city or one town, but there were pockets in multiple places. In fact, when we get to the story of Caleb and he says, I want that mountain. There's a song written with that title, right? One of the things he said was, I know the giants are there, but if God will help me, we'll take care of the giants. So this is in chapter 11, kind of a summary, and that story is filled out later. But it says, from the mountains of Judah, that's in the south. Okay? And then it says, from the mountains of Israel, which, is everything, middle and up. So the yellow and various colors in the northern half of that section, there were pockets of giants in that section as well. Okay, what it says here in verse 21 at the end is Joshua destroyed them utterly. Okay, not a problem anymore. They're gone. Verse 22, there was none of the Anakims left in the land of the children of Israel, only in Gaza, Gath, and Ashdod. Where's Gaza, Gath, and Ashdod? All right, let me go back over here to this one so I can zoom in a little bit more. On the left-hand side there, the first name on the lower left that's written out over the water that would be the Mediterranean, that's Gaza. The next one up is Ashkelon. The next one up is Ashdod. All right, well, due east to the right of Gaza, inland here, I'll try to circle it with my pointer here, this is Gath. Okay, so basically we got a triangle right here. This area right here, that's where the giants still were. Most famous giant in the Bible was from Gath. What was his name? Goliath. Right, exactly right. So for the most part, they subdued them. But what we're told here in verse 22 is all the rest of the Anakims were wiped out. Only in Gaza, Gath, and Ashdod were they left. Okay? So there was a pocket. You can see on this particular map where I've zoomed in that this area that was allocated to Judah, pink, purple, whatever shade you want to call it, you see what's also written over the top of that? Philistia. That was the land of the Philistines. Okay, that was a continual problem basically until the time of David. After the time of David, we don't hear nearly as much about the Philistines anymore, but David had many, many battles with the Philistines in the earlier years of his reign as king, but that seems to have really, you know, knocked down the Philistine problem, because we don't hear near as much about it during the time of Solomon or the following kings. But if you see here, I'll come back out just a little bit. Look at the big letters in black. Now, the one that's half cut off at the bottom is Amalek, the Amalekites. Well, then the one on an angle this way, Philistia, that's the Philistines. To the right of Amalek is Edom. And then directly above Edom is Moab and Ammon. So all the names that we hear about, the Canaanites, the Philistines, the Amalekites, the Edomites, the Moabites, the Ammonites, that's where they lived. You know, that's the original home place, and that's where when Israel's coming in, God said, I'm going to give you most of that land. What's the land that God said he wasn't going to give them? Moab and Ammon, it's the two sons of Lot, and then Edom. So on your map, on the far right, on the the lower right quadrant, if we divide it into four there, that would be the general area that God said he was not going to give them. He had given them to their cousins. All right, so Joshua 11, verse 23, Joshua took the whole land according to all that the Lord had said unto Moses, and Joshua gave it for inheritance unto Israel according to their divisions by their tribes. Now, if you read that statement and you've read the rest of Joshua, you know that this is a summary. And we're getting ready to get the rest of the story. Because it's not divided out for an inheritance to the tribes at this point in time, necessarily. Or at least we get the rest of the story in subsequent chapters. But if you think about how much area that is, and they're all on foot all the time. I mean, it's not unreasonable to think they had, you know, battles after battles, and it took 5 years or so to really do all of the fighting and all of that, but that's where they're at, right? So then that brings us into chapter 12. You ever been in the middle of a project or, you know, in the middle of a busy season of life and people say, how's it going? And you're like, I don't know. I don't really have enough time to slow down and think about it. Okay. You don't have any of that problem when you're moving, setting up a new house, right? I didn't think so. Okay. You know, starting new responsibilities, you know. None of us ever have that going on, right? But, you know, hopefully with the things that we're talking about, there is an end in or a slowdown at least in sight that's shorter time frame than 5 years, okay? But I think 5 years is a pretty fair timeline here, but 4 or 5 years, whatever, it's just been one battle after another. They're wiping out cities, they're collecting spoil, they're taking it back to wherever the storage depot is to be divided later, you know, and okay, now we're going over here, we're going over here, and I'll see you. When are you going to be back? I have no idea. It might be a week, it might be 6 months, it might be a year. You know, the army's just fighting. Sometimes, you know, in the middle of all that, it's hard to have perspective. Right? Why are we doing all this? I'm just tired of the fighting. I want to go home. You know, I want this to be over with. I want to do something else. You know, sometimes it's hard to gain the perspective that we need. And, you know, I think what we have here in chapter 12 is a good reminder for us that sometimes we just need to stop and review what the Lord's done. You know, how did the Lord get us to this point? In chapter 12, we see a little bit of perspective. Now, it doesn't sound like the most exciting reading. If you're in Joshua on your Bible reading plan, and you get to Joshua chapter 12, you're like, oh. So, you know, you have a little bit in the first few verses, then you get down to verse 9, the king of Jericho, the king of Ai, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmish, the king of Eglon, the king of Debir. What'd you learn in your devotions today? Names. I mean, sometimes it seems a little bit like that. I wasn't supposed to say that out loud, right? Okay. But sometimes you get to chapter 12 and you're kind of like, okay, what are we doing with this? Really, this is a perspective, important aspect of perspective, I think. Chapter 12, verse 1. Now these are the kings of the land which the children of Israel smote and possessed their land on the other side of Jordan toward the rising of the sun. The other side of Jordan towards the rising of the sun. What are we talking about? The east side? Okay, that's not a trick question. Okay, so that would be the ones that they conquered while Moses was still alive. They crossed the Jordan and went west under the leadership of Joshua after the death of Moses. The end of verse 1, from the river Arnon unto Mount Hermon and all the plain on the east, Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt in Heshbon and ruled from Aroer, which is on the bank of the river Arnon, from the middle of the river, from half Gilead, even under the river Jabbok, which is the border of the children of Ammon, and from the plain to the sea of Chinneroth on the east, and under the sea of the plain, even the salt sea on the east, the way to Beth Jeshimon, and from the south, under Ashdoth Pisgah, and the coast of Og, king of Bashan, which was of the remnant of the giants that dwelt at Ashtaroth and at Edrei, and reigned in Mount Hermon, and in Salcah and Bashan, and the border of the Gishrites, Maacathites, half Gilead, Sihon, etc. You already checked out on me with all the names, didn't you? Okay, I understand. But what does this mean? Okay, let's try to find a few of these names, shall we? Did we hear Ashtoreth? All right, this is as far as I can zoom it. But in the upper right section here where I'm trying to put my pointer, Ashtaroth, that's it right there. The Sea of Chinnereth that it's mentioned in the East Plain, what is that? Well, that's right here. That's the Sea of Galilee. So we're talking about this region here, east of the Sea of Galilee. Can you see where I have my pointer right now? Can you read that? What does that say? Golan. Never heard anything about that in today's Middle East news, have you? The Golan Heights, still that same region of the world. Okay? And so you have it mentioned from the east of the Salt Sea, which is the Dead Sea down here, to the east of the Sea of Chinnereth. What you see here in this little darker shade, running up this line, bluish, purplish, whatever you want to call it, blue-gray, I don't care. The yellow part, this part here is the general region that was conquered under Moses. I mean, a lot of times, you know, I tend to think of it as this one little section, kind of between Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea, but it was actually a lot bigger than that. It went all the way up on the east side of the Sea of Galilee, that whole plain, and it talks about up, in one instance, it talked about Mount Hermon. I don't know that I have it on this map. I think I have it on the previous map. Yeah. Okay, but Mount Hermon and Geshur, that's up in this region here. Okay, sorry about this. I've tried different ways, and that's about as far as I can zoom it in. But nonetheless, that's a rather large area on the east side of Jordan, isn't it? Today, it would be in the area that's called Jordan or Syria, depending, you know, on the borders. But that's a rather large area. So they're reviewing here. But, I mean, if you think about it, how many acres is that? Or how are we going to measure it? Square furlongs? Square miles? That's a lot of ground to cover. I mean, that's a lot of ground that was given to the 2.5 tribes on the condition that they would go over and fight, right? But that's what's covered here in the first few verses of chapter number 12, verse 6. Them, all the names we already read, did Moses, the servant of the Lord, and children of Israel smite. And Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave it for a possession to the Reubenites, Gadites, and half-tribe of Manasseh. And these are the kings of the country which Joshua and the children of Israel did smote on this side of Jordan on the west, from Baal Gad in the valley of Lebanon, even into Mount Halak that goeth up to Seir. Okay, so Lebanon is in the north. Seir is another name for Edom. So that's in the south. You know, so we're talking about south to north, you know, kind of this whole area over here. Okay, verse 8. In the mountains, in the valleys, the plains, the springs, the wilderness, the south country. It's interesting. Let me go back to this one. I still cut it off a little bit. But the south, one of the Hebrew words that's used for south is Negev, which means desert. Because the south of Israel where they lived was the desert. But the south country is down toward Sinai Peninsula where they wandered a long time. Okay, so when it talks about, you know, the South, it's not talking about the Civil War, okay, but it's talking about that region down toward Sinai where they had wandered for a long time. The Hittites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites. And then it boils down to listing cities, some of them we're familiar with, king of Jericho, the king of Ai, which is beside Bethel, the king of Jerusalem. Those are familiar names. The king of Jarmuth, not as familiar. The king of Lachish, yeah, I've heard that one. King of Eglon, I thought he was a king. Well, that was a city too. The king of Debir, Hormah, Libna, Arad, Geder, etc., etc., etc. You say, well, I don't want to read all those names. Okay, fair enough. But let's just say your unit of the army was responsible for fighting, I don't know, Madon. I just picked a name that's not real familiar. It's in verse number 19 there, the king of Madon. All right, you spent days and weeks laying out the assault, fighting, conquering, taking the spoil, destroying the city. Would you want that name on the list? Yeah, I think I would. I wouldn't want it to be left. I mean, to us, it's like, whatever. Kind of like sometimes we view even our own American history and, you know, World War I, World War II, and things like that. It's very easy to think it doesn't matter when there truly is significance. Some of these cities, we still know where they are. Some of them we don't, or not with certainty. But the king of Kedesh won, the king of Jokneam of Carmel won, the king of Dor in the coast of Dor. Where's that? Okay. When we talk about Carmel, that is way up north. He talks about the Geshurites, that's up here. Dor is more over here on the coast, you know, kind of Tyre and Sidon area, if I'm remembering my geography correctly, and if I'm not, I'm sure somebody will correct me later. But all of these things, so what we're talking about is from the south country down here, and Hebron and Gath and Ashkelon and all of that, Jerusalem, you know, all the way up here, all the way up to Lebanon, and, you know, Dor, which is up towards Tyre and Sidon and all that, Geshurites, Ammonites, all of those. And what had previously been subdued is this section here. I mean, if you were going to say, hey, let me just tell you what the Lord did with my people. We conquered 31 cities. It's pretty impressive, isn't it? That's pretty significant. That's not a task of, you know, one city a day for a month. You know, that's a very impressive resume. That's a lot of fighting. That's a lot of battles. That's a lot of risk. That's a lot of prayers for protection, right? If you say, you know, our people conquered hundreds of square miles of land that didn't previously belong to us, that's something significant, is it not? So when we look at Joshua chapter 12 and go, ugh, you know, names, more names, cities, people that I don't know. For Joshua and for the children of Israel, this is very significant. Okay? I could start asking you names. Or ask, I contemplated doing that this morning. But I'm sure if I said, give me, the name of somebody that you prayed for, and the Lord, answered that prayer, whether they got saved or was a help need or something, I bet it wouldn't take real long before the only person in this room that knows a name you're throwing out there is your spouse or a relative. Does that mean it's insignificant? No, it just means it's unfamiliar. Does that mean, it doesn't matter? Of course not. But sometimes, we tend to focus on, my things don't. Actually, they do. I mean, we don't know who was the king of Libna. We're not given a name. We're just given a title. The king of the king of the king of the king of the king of. Most of these, we're not even given their name. Well, what was significant here was answered prayer, God's intervention on their behalf, the miraculous working of God on behalf of his children, the power of God on display. I mean, that's perspective, isn't it? And that's something that it does us good to do every once in a while, is to go back and review. Now, if you're like me, you're probably going to have to write it down, because if it's been more than a couple of hours, I forgot. In some cases, a couple of minutes. Okay? But, you write, when you start making a list of the things that the Lord has done, the way he's provided, the way he's answered prayer, the ways he's protected, the things that the Lord has done, day by day, it seems like one thing here or one thing there. But you go back and say, all right, well, now let's kind of summarize and review what happened over the last few years. That list adds up, doesn't it? It's significant. And really, I find encouragement in that. Well, it seems like nothing's happening, but if I go back and review, this and this and this and this and this. Yeah, the Lord isn't dead. The Lord hasn't forgotten about me. I'm not being sacrilegious. I'm just saying sometimes we think we're kind of lost in the shuffle somewhere. But, the Lord is working. God has done this, and God has done this. God's provided this. God has helped us in this battle or this situation. So when we see here the names and the cities and the kings, and you're welcome, I didn't do verse by verse through chapter 12. Okay, but I do think that it does provide perspective. And a good reminder for us to every once in a while have a list somewhere and go back and review. This is what the Lord did. I'm not great. I'm not a journal person. Some people are good at that. Okay, that's not me. But write down somewhere the list of things. You start to go back and it used to be look through the photo albums or the scrapbooks. Now it's look through the photos on your phone. But, sometimes you just scroll through there and you see, it reminds us of people, places, answers to prayer, things the Lord has done. It's good for perspective. Because sometimes we just kind of get so zoomed in on the moment that we lose the bigger picture. And a lot of what we have in Joshua is more zoomed in on the moment. But in chapter 12, we have perspective. In the end of chapter 11, we see that God, just as he said he would, took care of the giants. In chapter 12, some of these cities probably belonged to the giants, others did not, but you see how every region from the far south to the far north and the areas in between, every region that God had promised them, everywhere your foot touches on the ground, I'm going to give it to you, God kept the promise. And so if we take that and apply it to our day, we can say, yeah, the Lord's provided, the Lord's taken care of us, the Lord's answered prayer, the Lord has protected. And sometimes just taking a breath and zooming out to the big picture view gives us the perspective that we need to go on. Because what we're going to see in chapter 13 and 14 here is there was a period of time when it wasn't all what it needed to be. Hey, there's still land to be possessed, there's more tasks to accomplish, here's the next thing on the chart. But every once in a while it does good just to zoom out and say, Lord, thank you for what you've done. Thank you for your provision, thank you for your protection, thank you for your power. And then draw encouragement from that. If God took care of this problem, then God will take care of the next one that comes up, and that's the way God intends for us to view it. All right, so some perspective on God's work in Israel from Joshua chapter 12. Let's close there for today. Thank you, Lord, for the lessons you can teach us from your word. And I pray that you'd help us to have a right perspective on your person and your work. And Lord, I thank you for how you've provided. I was reminded even last week with some visitors for homecoming and things that we've kind of gotten used to here, how you brought us here and helped us through all the stages of the remodel process and all of that, and a lot of other things that we can talk about. But Lord, we thank you for your work and pray that you'd continue to have your hand on our lives individually and on the work of Maranatha Baptist Church. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. You're dismissed.